Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, followers. Gossip Girl here. Your one and only source for the truth behind the scandalous lies of New York's elite. Been a minute. Did you miss me? I know I've missed you.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 363 for the week of July 12th, 2021. I am Nice Shoes, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Blue Check, Sarah D. Bunting.
Verify this, loser.
Cuckolded Dad, Tara Ariano.
My pain should keep you from knowing your sister.
And Brooklyn Cool, Nadia Chathuri.
Born and raised New York before it was Instagram cool.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great, back in the studio for another week. Our guest, you've already heard her intro. You've seen her byline at Eater Austin and her many gorgeous food photos on her Instagram. It's Nadia Chathuri. Nadia!
Hello!
Nadia!
Hi, y'all.
Yay!
Thanks for having me.
We're thrilled to have you for this topic, especially. We're here to talk about the new Gossip Girl on HBO Max. For those who don't know, in a loose sequel to the original series, which aired from 2007 to 2012 on the CW, we join a group of students at Upper East Side private schools Constant Millard and St. Jude's as the 2021-22 school year begins. The main drama revolves around Queen Bee slash Instagram influencer Julian Calloway, played by Jordan Alexander, and her estranged half-sister Zoya, Whitney Peake, as the latter arrives from Buffalo to attend Constance Billard on a drama scholarship.
We apologize to all our Buffalo listeners.
Buffalo knows. Unbeknownst to Julian's bitchy friends, she and Zoya have been in contact and are excited to have a relationship despite their dad's antipathy toward each other having previously kept them apart. Seems like everything's going to be cool between them until a group of teachers at the school, frustrated by the students' total lack of respect for them, hear about the long-ago blog Gossip Girl and how it acted as a check on that class of kids' worst impulses, or at least made them accept that they were living in a panopticon. To try to regain their power, the teachers, led by Kate Keller, Tabby Gevinson, decide to revive Gossip Girl as a joint project and start right in driving a wedge between Zoya and Julian. Only the first episode has aired. If we talk about events from the later ones, we'll be vague about the plot. Let us go around the horn for the Chen check-in. Nadia, should our listeners watch the new Gossip Girl?
I'm going to say a begrudging yes.
Okay, Sarah.
Begrudging yes is about it. Yeah, begrudging yes.
I'll go next. I probably am going to keep watching it, but I would not necessarily recommend it. Dave.
Yeah, I'll back you up on that one. But yeah, it's definitely a no for me.
Okay. Nadia, you, as you said, were formerly a New York City teen, exactly the right age for the original series. What does the sequel lack? I'm basing this off a tweet of yours about the pilot. What does it lack that made the original so addictive, or are we just put off by it because we are now older, or in the case of the Extra Hot Great co-host panel, just old?
My issue with that premiere is that there's nothing left to your imagination. It's all out in the open. We already know who Gossip Girl is. Mm-hmm. Granted, yes, the original series messed that up greatly by the end, but still, we kept watching because we wanted to know who Gossip Girl was. Mm-hmm. We know who Gossip Girl is. Spoiler alert, I guess, maybe if you didn't watch the first episode yet, but and there's no intrigue. There's no like reason to care about the entire name of the show. Mm-hmm. We know who Gossip Girl. And then there's the fact that it's the teachers, and that's so gross.
Yeah.
It's too gross to me. When the guy is outside taking the photo, of the two teens. In,
yeah.
Like, we're underage, really, by the way. He's making child pornography.
Yeah, it's not legal.
The teachers were written as if they were the nerd clique in the school and not teachers, right? That's sort of their role. Mm-hmm. And this is like this weird revenge fantasy of theirs to become Gossip Girl in order to try to control the narrative and improve their station. But like, yeah, they're not written as teachers at all, like kind of silly. But like the first one, Gossip Girl, like it was a mystery, but it wasn't really like a considered mystery, right? Didn't they just like at the end of it, just roll the dice and choose who was going to be Gossip Girl?
Yes.
Kind of? Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I think so. Yeah. I mean, I actually had a note that was like from the watching the pilot that was like, I sort of wish that this series were about the teachers and like the, you know, class struggles in the faculty lounge, like over a series of decades in New York City, because I feel like New York Magazine's almost primary reason for existing at this point is that semi-annual like report in like pearl clutching tones of horror about whatever cuddle puddles at Stuyvesant High School or whatever thing is supposed to absolutely terrify the boomers who subscribe to it. But it's like, okay, I'd watch that. Like, I'm as fascinated by these, like, you know, Vanity Fair behind the scenes exposés of the people so rich you've never heard of them as anyone else. But this kind of felt like it missed another point of the original Gossip Girl, which is like, stop trying to acknowledge that these people are extremely privileged. And make some of them sympathetic in the way that they're like, I don't know, like raising money for school supplies or whatever it is. Like, we are here to indulge in the fantasy of this world and this New York. And I don't necessarily need a reminder that these are bad people. Like, that's why we're watching. I don't know if that makes any sense, but like, I felt like the show felt guilty about asking us to care about incredibly rich people and their shoes. And it's like, well, then what are we doing here? Like, not that the original was aspirational necessarily, but like we weren't not watching for the shiny hair. I don't know.
Nadia, it seems like you agree.
I definitely agree. And it's, I mean, with this the premiere of the reboot, it touches upon sort of what you're talking about, like the one guy, what's his face? Odie?
Odie? Ollie?
Odie?
Let me look it up. I think it's Ollie.
Otto?
Like, he kind of presents that juxtaposition of, like, I guess he's raised in a hella wealthy family and very privileged, but then he sort of, like, rallies for causes that are, like, for the city and goes feeds Navy Yard strikers and stuff like that.
He's
like
Dylan.
Yeah.
But yeah, like different cause, but like he has his own floor or whatever. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. He's Dylan McKay.
Yeah.
And that's something, he was the most maybe interesting character to me along those lines. And the fact that they did touch, I will give it credit for, like, I remember calling this specific line out too. It's a, you know, yeah, they're underage drinking, but like there's no peer pressure for like the new girl to drink. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated them saying that line.
Yeah.
So there are touches of this, like, oh, they're not horribly bad, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I'm pretty sure I heard the kid with the pink hair call it Top Chico, like Top Ramen instead of Topo Chico.
I did not catch that. I also appreciated the Yeti, basically, yeah, product placement early, mm-hmm, on in the episodes. Mm-hmm. Texas Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I rewatched the pilot of the original series after we watched the sequel, and I was astounded by how different its take on relationship fidelity was than this one. Like, in the pilot, that the old one, it was a huge deal that Blair was delaying sex with Nate and also deciding to use it to try to, like, lock him down, given whatever was going on with him and Serena, whereas here it's established that Max wants to fuck Audrey and Ock, and Audrey at least is very into it. Like, how times have changed. I guess everyone is poly in high school. That was, like, not shocking to me, but it was just a funny change of, like, this is how we're portraying it now. Anyone else?
Yeah, no, it was very, not Dangerous Liaisons. Help me. The one with Buffy.
Cruel Intentions.
Thank you. It was, like, it felt very Cruel Intentions to, yeah, me, but it also felt a little bit like, performative or like pointedly Polly in this way that was like, here again, I think that it just needs to let itself be what it is, which is rich kids just being rich and being kids. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we necessarily need like a ticker along the bottom of like, in the last 20 years, we've seen advances in thinking about like, guys, we know, like, it's a television show. Like, we're actually here for the artifice. And that was sort of my only problem with it. But that said, almost everybody in it is heart-stopping to look at. And I'm happy to just look at it. Like, I don't need to watch it. The sound doesn't have to be on. I covered WB shows. I'm pretty sure I know what's going to happen. Like, just let's look at it. Let's let it wash over us visually. That's enough.
I'm very into this threesome polyamorous relationship that they're definitely going to set up, because it's that's another point that I think is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
And speaks to youths today.
I have the utmost respect for Tavi Gevinson as a writer, which is why it pains me to say she's so bad. Am I the only one who thought she was awful?
I was having trouble placing her until I realized that her voice and acting mannerism / skill level is exactly the same as Kate from the Mysterious Benedict Society. Like, she sounds exactly the same. She has that, but I'm going to do this, and here's the thing, and I am a teacher, and I have my bucket. Like, it was so similar. And, you know, one of them is 11, and one of them is not. And, she was not good. And you get an early indication that character is a monster on the opening scene in the subway, where she doesn't have her tippy-type sounds turned off on her phone.
And is watching Instagram stories with the sound
without
on.
A headphones, yeah.
Yes.
She's old. That's what she's supposed to. She's old.
Nadia, you were vigorously nodding. You also thought she was bad.
My first note when I saw her in the beginning, I just wrote, lol, Tavi. Like, I also don't know how old she is. I don't know how old. These kids are what? They're junior sophomores?
She's 25. I believe.
She's a baby.
Yeah.
And to, like, when she kept running into the kids at school and they were, like, mean-girling her, like, it just felt like there were just, like, two different cliques rather than a teacher.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if I take her seriously as an adult teacher, especially if she's – or not if – especially as Gossip Girl. Like,
Yeah. Well, and there's also, like, a more than passing resemblance to Michelle Williams, which is just, like, weird. Like, it's not – this is not a comparison that helps anyone, them, us, but it's just like an uncanny valley kind of thing to have this like Jen Lindley, like Oscar nominated face, but then it's Tavi who's not that. It's just, I don't know. Like I said, listening to it, paying close attention, maybe not the play. Who can say?
I also don't buy that teachers would have had no idea what the OG Gossip Girl was, especially teaching at the school. Like, that cannot be their first time finding out the whole Dan Humphrey story. And then also the fact that the Gossip Girl website is still active, or they're still paying for, or Dan Humphrey, I guess, is still keeping those archives live.
The novelist? LOLOL.
Oh, and also Nate Archibald as an example of a great guy.
He's a fish man.
A respected figure is what they said.
I felt like everyone was just very one-dimensional. Like, I was especially bored by Luna and her one joke about invisible freshmen. Like, okay, three times is enough. That'll do. I just sort of felt like there was not anyone to root for, especially. Like, it feels like we're supposed to be on the teacher's side, even though they are psychologically torturing teenagers.
Exactly. Like, this is basically cyberbullying the show. Like, there's not one side of the equation that is not sticking it to the other some way, either IRL or most likely, you know, over Instagram or whatever they're using.
Yeah. Nadia, you disagree, though.
I don't know if I buy us or the show wanting us to root for the teachers.
Okay.
I think a lot about like these Instagram call out accounts all the time. And it's sort of along those lines. And it's their intentions are so malicious I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think the teachers are supposed to be kind of dumb. I think like that's what they want their target audience to under, you know, to want, that their teachers aren't smarter than them.
Right.
Aren't better than them. You know, and I'm sure they'll do some humanizing at some point during this show's run. But right now it is love these students because they got so much and they're cool. And, you know, they all got their own problems and they're all going to fight each other. But teachers, like they're sort of second tier villain kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're
just like, yeah. Yeah. I think the show wants us to root for it as a with it. Hello, fellow kids entity, that because they have that one teacher who's like the Virgil of the writer's room,
right,
being like, oh, no, we get it. Twitter is for people over 30, conspiracy theorists and Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I was like,
yes.
Did an over 30 write this? Like, guys, bring it down a notch. Like, I think the show really wants us to believe that it's been updated, and I think maybe the crux of my issues with it, and again, I'm going to keep watching it because whatever, but I think the crux of my issues with it are that it's not confident in who it's for. Is it for kids the age of the characters?
Right.
And P.S., like some of the people that they've cast as freshmen, laughable. or is it for people who fondly remembered the original? But like, pick a lane and then stop trying to make fun of both demographics in the form of this one teacher.
Right.
Who's like, here's what a blue check mark means. Like, oh, guys.
Well, let's close on this. Hands up, everyone who has those sneakers in their cart right now. Me. I do.
Me.
They're really cool sneakers.
They really are.
Yeah.
And they're not that expensive. I was like, they're only $70 and they're on Gossip Girl. Holy shit. Like, I mean, that was the one thing that made me think this show was trying to be for me, because they're not like $800 or something. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm willing to be sold too.
Before we head off, we do have one special guest who has a little something to say.
Oh.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
Yeah, hello. Has it been a long time since you see me here on podcast? An official Doug mascot of Extra Hot Great, it Gordon Lightfoots. I'm here to tell you that all shows, including Gossip Girls, no longer should have text noises on TV. Just make them mutes, because every time I hear dings, dog no likes and dog go in closet and hide. So you do this for me, and I do favors for you in return. Thank you very much. I'm not crackpots. It's time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching on TV lately. Our first stop, as always, is with Tara.
Hello. I just want to follow on Gordon's remarks. It is a very rude show in that respect. Anytime that it's really only text mark sounds, he's not bothered by the keyboards. It's
whoop. It's that noise. It's the boop and
the iPhone.
Yep. I mean, while we're up, Bear and we, his companions, would really like it if they switched up doorbell noises in commercials, because that's been causing some problems.
Interesting. Anyway, around the dial. First up, my highbrow pick, The White Lotus. This was my What I'm Into show from our summer preview episode a few weeks back. In this series, a bunch of ultra VIPs arrive at the titular resort in Hawaii for a week-long vacation. We have the Mossbachers. The husband and wife are played by Steve Zahn and Connie Britton, and they've come with their daughter, who's brought a friend, and their son. And then there's the Pattons, who are newlyweds. These are Jake Lacy and Alexander Daddario. And then Tanya, played by Jennifer Coolidge. They are all assisted by, among others, resort manager Armand, Marie Bartlett from Looking, and trainee Lonnie, Jolene Purdy from Under the Dome, but I'm not going to hold that against her. So Tanya's come with her mother's ashes to scatter and a lot of just need in general, and she imprints on the spa manager Belinda, who's played by Natasha Rothwell from Insecure, after an intense scalp massage. Then there's Rachel, the Alexander Daddario character. She's married into what seems to be a wildly rich real estate family, and she's not sure how to feel about it yet, except that her husband Shane's morbid obsession about having not been moved into the honeymoon suite is grossing her out. And we don't see much of the Mosbacher parents in the first episode, but daughter Olivia, played by Sydney Sweeney, and her friend Paula, Brittany O'Grady from Little Voice, are extremely hilarious mean girls. They were my favorite part of the show. The scene where they microaggress Rachel by the pool is like note perfect. And especially after having just watched the new Gossip Girl, I was much more interested in this take on late teen girls and how scary they can be, particularly when you want their approval, but you don't really know why. And in her review at Slate, our recent guest, Willa Paskin, said she's getting kind of bored by HBO's many shows about rich white people being dicks. And I get it. But for me, what makes this one different so far, I've only watched the first one, is Armand and Lonnie and what we see of their responses to the guests. Armand is particularly also very funny. And the show's from Mike White, so I would probably be in for the whole series, even if it was even if the first episode was a huge bore, which it was not. Did anyone else watch it?
We watched it last night, actually. And I the scene where Alexandra is at the pool and they're just like asking questions and then they just giggle afterwards.
Or they just stare at her.
When she walks into the pool and is like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's good. Then Dave and I also watched Monsters at Work, the new Disney Plus series. This picks up in the immediate aftermath of the Monsters energy industry switching from scares to laughs, which is bad news for Tyler Tuskman, voiced by Ben Feldman, who has been recruited as a scarer right out of Monsters University. Sully, Mike Wazowski, and Celia are all voiced by their original actors. And with Waternoose out, Mike and Sully have been promoted to run the plant. And Roz is replaced by her less bubbly sister, Rose. Same voice, and I looked it up. It's Rose. It's just R-O-Z-E. Still with a Z. Just cute. Tyler is not ready for the floor in a non-scaring context yet, but because his parents have a hardware store, he gets recruited to MIFT, Monsters Industries Facilities Team. So he becomes our POV character as we get introduced to the new characters. Boss Fritz, voiced by Henry Winkler, Tyler's former classmate Val, Mindy Kaling, no-nonsense Cutter, Alana Ubach, and Duncan Lucas Neff, who is in line for Fritz's job, or so he says. And Tyler keeps saying he's only going to be a MIFTer until he gets called up to do the closet thing. He is taking Mike's lunch hour comedy classes to get ready. But the second episode shows us that the MIFT characters are not just clowns. They know what they're doing. They're very important to the running of the plant. So that may be Tyler's journey. Too soon to know, of course. And it is funny that Ben Feldman is doing this right after Superstore, where he also played a guy who kind of thought he was too good for the job. But anyway, I would say it doesn't have hard adult laughs. It seems like it's geared more for kids, especially with like big slapsticky moments, but it's very cute. The animation looks incredible. Kids will like it. Dave, you watched this with me. What was your take?
Yeah, I agreed. It seems like it was targeted a little younger, but I was also surprised at how much Billy Crystal and John Goodman they actually inserted into these episodes. Like, they're in it quite a bit. I doubt that's going to carry through for the rest of the series, but it wasn't just like off
Chrissy
camera.
Snow.
Or they had one scene and then, you know, it was like, and now you're my number two. Report to this person and I will no longer be talking. So that was nice. I mean, Disney's got deep pockets. Right. They should be able to do this, but it's nice to see.
What I expected was when I looked on IMDb that it would be soundalikes, but I was surprised it was really them.
Yeah.
For my plugs, I wrote about Laura Layton, her guest appearance in a recent Dynasty, and I got to interview her for it, which was very cool. That was at Decider. And I was also, as Jeb mentioned when he was here recently, Linda Holmes and I were both on the podcast It's Christmas Town talking about the recent Hallmark movie You Had Me at Aloha. And that podcast is now up, and we will link both of those things in the show notes.
Nadia, what have you been watching lately?
So I've been bad about TV watching, I guess, because of going now back out in the world, social events and parties, and just seeing people being vaxxed is great.
It's the number one threat to TV we have today.
Yeah.
People going out and having fun.
Stand firm, people.
Yeah. a recent show that we watched and we like binged it so fast was We Are Lady Parts on Peacock. It is phenomenal. And particularly, it's a group about, I didn't realize how deeply we have to get into the whole synopsis of it.
You don't, because I talked about it on a recent episode. So you can just say your reactions.
So it's a group of Muslim British women who three of them are already in this punk group, and they're enticing a fourth to be their lead guitar player. And I'm Muslim American myself, and it was nice seeing Muslim actors depicted in a way that's, they're just who they are, and it's not judgy, or it's not like poo-poo, you're not like covering your hair, or like you can cover your hair if you want, and you don't like. And the way they interact with their parents, or at least the main character, the way she interacts with her parents and still lives at home with them, and it's not like a judgment on her character that she still lives at home. And it's the little touches like that is, it makes me very happy. Like, yeah. Cause it, and it's just, the songs are fun. Their chemistry is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like I would want like hours and hours of like their back tapes, maybe just to like, I would want to hang out with them, honestly. And the main character is lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great show.
It's worth the Peacock subscription just for that, honestly.
I agree.
So my plugs is, I am the editor of Eater Austin, which is a website that covers food and restaurant news based in Austin. Eater is a network of websites across the country and in Montreal and London. I cover news. We cover maps, telling y'all to the best places to get like pizza or fried chicken, or, and my favorite thing that I've put together is our Eater 38, which is a signature piece for Eaters. It is a collection of 38 restaurants that we feel define Austin, and it's not just fancy pants places.
When we first moved here, every time I looked up, like, where's the best whatever in
all
Austin?
All roads lead back to
every
Nadia.
Single one. Yeah. Was my
SEO is your friend.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I have a couple of Netflix properties to talk about. Let's start with Heist. Talk about SEO friendly. Like, I appreciate the directness of the title, but this is not Money Heist. And this is not the David Mamet movie Heist, starring Delroy Lindo and Tara's friend and mine, Gene Hackman.
Indeed.
Although you should watch that. I think it's on Stars at the moment. And
correct.
It's good. Sam Rockwell's also in it, and Rebecca Pidgeon isn't as bad as she could be. Anyway, Actual Heist is a modular series on Netflix. It's true crime. Modular is probably not the right word, but it's a 6-episode set. Each episode is a manageable, fast-paced 40 to 45 minutes long. But then the episodes come in pairs to tell, over the course of the season, the story of 3 different heists. So it's kind of a cool set up where you can portion it out however you want. And because these are heists that were successful in not killing anyone, if you decide to marathon the whole set, it's like 6 hours and you won't feel kind of existentially nauseated afterwards. But then if you want to just break it down per heist, that's roughly the length of a feature documentary per discrete story. So that's kind of cool. And then you can shuffle them around depending on whether you're in the mood for an airport job, a top shelf bourbon heist, which I'm always in the mood for, or a Vegas armored car robbery that actually worked for like a while. Like, I won't say anything more than that, but this is definitely a series that holds your attention, and you won't be like second screening during it to look up what actually happened. And you shouldn't be, because that will spoil it. I had to write about it for Primetimer, so I did end up doing that, and I regretted it. But that write-up will be in the show notes. But yeah, Heist. It's not as heavy as a lot of docuseries in this genre. Interviewees get emotional, but there's no special victims. There's no fatalities. If you do end up marathoning it, you won't feel as gross. And their PR materials were like, it's reminiscent of Steven Soderbergh. And I was like, easy. Like, I could seriously act out all the parts in Ocean's 11, including like the van. So don't be stepping to that and Logan Lucky, please. But it is pretty like jazzy and well edited and stylish and confident. And I think it's really well done. And I talk more about that and some of the more emotional moments in the Primetimer piece. If you're more in the mood for pop music history, This Is Pop is also really good, super smart approach to documentary storytelling about pop music, just because of the way they carve up the topics into like narrow, focused things like A History of Auto-Tune, When Country Went Pop, The Britpop Battle. It means that they'll be able to keep doing seasons on different subtopics for a while, which I'm definitely about. Because even when an episode doesn't quite connect, like the music festivals episode, I think they weren't totally sure what their actual take was. So it just felt kind of broad and unfocused, but it was a big swing. And it does make you think about why an episode doesn't work and all the stories you wish they'd mentioned additionally slash instead. Like it's not boring. It's just sometimes not quite as good as it could be. I would start with When Country Went Pop, which definitely foregrounds women's and the queer experience in country and pop music. The auto-tune one is also fascinating. I liked the Britpop one, probably out of proportion to its quality, but that just like brought me back to a time in my life when people cared what Liam Gallagher was doing at 2 a.m. Remember that time? He and his unibrow. So I would start with those. But Mark Blankenship and I, Mark is my co-host on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, go figure, we'll be digging into the entire first season in an upcoming episode of our podcast. But first, in next week's episode, we'll be talking about a song called On Broadway, which is, of course, by Mr. George Benson.
Yay!
Happy I could get that plug in here. That's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Coming up on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great, it's TV vacations. Where in the TV universe would we like to go on vacation? What are we going to do? Who are we going to do it with? What actors are we going to force to do things for our amusement once we get there? You'll find out Friday on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Patreon.com/extrahotgreat. And then next week, right here on EHG Prime with Schmigadoon with Sean Pfluger, or as he likes to say, Sean Pfluger. First time guest, longtime friend of the show. Check that out next week, right here. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. This week, a submission from Lauren. Take it away, Lauren.
As a woman who works in technology, Halt and Catch Fire means a great deal to me. But what I really think makes the show stand out is its relationships. It is one of the few true workplace shows in my mind, one that actually takes the work seriously and how meaningful and complicated relationships between passionate collaborators can be. And the fact that the show's main area of focus is between collaborators who are women make it truly special to me. This episode is canon worthy because it stands at a tipping point of the show's major relationships and takes them over cliffs where they need to go. The episode is filled to the brim, so instead of trying to grab every plot point, I will touch on these relationships. Number one, Cameron and Donna and the end of Mutiny as we know it. Throughout the series up to this point, we have seen Cam and Donna meet, decide to collaborate and build their gaming, then chat, then proto eBay company Mutiny together. And the show has shown up to now why they're such dynamic collaborators. The wild genius of Cameron and the fierce competency of Donna. And the series has shown their differences and why it was maybe inevitable that it all fall apart. So the decision about whether to take Mutiny public is at the forefront of this episode. Donna and Cam begin the episode already in pretty passive-aggressive conflict. Cam wants to run Mutiny like the extension of herself that she sees it to be. And Donna has told some lies of convenience to do what she thinks needs to be done for the company to grow. They're both pissed and frustrated with each other, but they both desperately want to reconcile. That push and pull is so very compelling, and something about it is very female to me. And they're just both so joyful in being able to talk and move on to discuss the hypothetical IPO.
I'm not completely opposed to it.
You're not?
No, I mean, we're in the land of the IPO. If I wasn't open to it, I would have just stayed in Texas.
Imagine having the resources to take the company wherever we want to go.
Yeah, I have a pretty big imagination.
I'm counting on it.
The relief of having someone you're close with tell you that there's a path forward is so relatable. Of course, it goes crappy again fast.
I'm sure everything that you've outlined here is great. I am. But we can't afford to wait 2 years.
Sure we can.
The time frame for the IPO is 3 months.
3 months? No one ever said anything about 3 months. Why is that suddenly the magic number?
Because we have an acquisition offer in hand. People are paying attention to us right now.
But what we have right now is broken.
What we have right now, CompuServe thinks is worth $20 million.
Yes, but if we make the improvements the way I know we can, we'll be worth $100 million. I thought we were in agreement on this.
We still can be.
Okay, look, I really hate to play this card, but as head of the company, I'm saying that we need to put the brakes on any IPO until we get our house in order.
The two try so hard to be gentle with each other, but they are just coming from such different places. Sam does not want Mutiny to be anything but perfect. And Donna, a bit older with more responsibilities, sees a time to make some good money to build into the future. This all comes to a head at the ill-advised party to celebrate Cam's ill-advised marriage to Doofus Tom. Not enough time to talk about Doofus Tom today. Donna does not have the genius of Cam, but she is shrewd and smart. She gets the upper hand by preparing for a board vote on the IPO to overrule Cameron if necessary. As things go, Donna, sensing weakness, pretty quickly jumps in and all hell breaks loose.
Hey. Ladies, we are getting off track here.
Diane, it's mostly your thoughts coming out of her mouth, so I can't imagine what you have to add to the discussion.
Jesus, I don't know who should be more insulted. Trust me, if I'm expressing an opinion, it's because I believe it.
I should trust you, yes, of course. I mean, unless you're lying now, like you lied about Doug and Craig. Did you know about that? That when you told her it was fine if I fired them, she told me that I had to keep them on? Is that the sort of person that you want to trust with this business going
forward?
You mean
the kind of person who actually tries to make things work instead of fighting with anybody who threatens our savior complex?
I get along fine with people.
You alienate everybody.
Says the woman that will take any excuse not to go home to her husband.
All right.
Why don't we see if your marriage lasts the year before you start doling out relationship advice?
Donna! Enough! Enough! Hey, this meeting is over. All right? My God. You two go to your corners, wipe the blood off your mouths, and we will revisit.
Cameron, always impulsive, calls for a vote on the spot and threatens to quit if they vote for the IPO. Dawn, of course, loses her temper as well.
Go take a hard look at this company and ask yourself who made it what it is and who's just been along for the ride.
Cameron, please don't do this.
You want it? You got it. But I will not sit by and watch this company die because it's being held hostage by a petulant child. If we don't move forward with the IPO, then you can steer this ship into the rocks yourself because I am out of here.
Okay, Boz is right. Let's take a beat, cool off.
Show of hands, who's in favor of doing the IPO now? With all that that entails.
The vote is called, and even poor, loving, but financially ruined Boz has to vote for the IPO. In an uncharacteristically cinematic shot, the music swells and Cameron breaks down and sobs, her metaphorical child taken from her. Doofus' husband Tom leads her out. Everyone is sad. Everyone is broken. This sequence is the number one reason I think the episode is canon worthy. The chemistry between Davis and Bichet and the performances of the other actors as well is as good as exists on TV. And the show does not shy away from the realities and consequences of these characters' actions for narrative convenience. There is a time jump after this episode, and the show is something very different going forward. It opens the characters up creatively and allows them to grow like people do and change apart from each other. Now, Don and Cam eventually do come back together because of circumstances not to be spoiled. And they even think about working together a bit. But they are not the same people, and the friendship isn't easily repaired. For number two, a moment on Cam and Boz. The Cam and Boz dynamic was always one of my favorites on the show. The arc that Boz goes through is so quietly transforming, and this episode is an important moment for him. The two actors have such amazing chemistry. It shows a great work, paternal relationship that is never for 1 second creepy or near the line of appropriateness. And when Boz says, "You're breaking my heart," you believe him, and it broke mine a little too. And finally, because I can't help myself, get it, Boz and Diane. Number three, Joe and Gordon. The show figured out that Joe and Gordon wasn't the most interesting or dynamic relationship in the show after season one. And the end of season two explodes their partnership. The beginning of the season has some not particularly interesting business about a lawsuit between the two. But this episode brings the two back together because Joe has tanked the lawsuit in order to screw over his current employers. Gordon comes by to gloat, and I do enjoy sassy Gordon.
I never figured you for a sore winner.
Me either. It's nice to know we can still surprise ourselves.
And Gordon, perhaps learning something from Donna and Cam's demise, decides to give it another shot with Joe. And you can see there's a different energy between the two of them.
49%.
What?
Come run it with me. And 49% of the company's yours.
That's a cruel joke and quite frankly beneath you.
I'm serious. 49%.
The repaired Gordon-Joe relationship becomes a really beautiful thing, and here we're seeing the beginning. I'm not 100% sure it's earned, if Gordon really would go back into business with this guy, but he's had a rough few days, his marriage has not a ton of steam left in it, and why not? I really just enjoy Scoot McNairy and Lee Pace playing off of each other, and this sets up a lot of good stuff. Relationship number four, Joe and Ryan. The Ryan plot is about consequences. Throughout the whole series, Joe uses other people as pawns. He is mired in narcissism. And he does this with Ryan. He takes him on as an employee, as a fuck you to Gordon and Cameron. He has Ryan working on a secret project and basically communicates with him in ciphers. Throughout the season and episode, Ryan keeps trying to reach out to Joe and get information, and Joe just keeps hanging him out to dry. He will not give a straight answer. Joe may not mean to hurt Ryan, but he doesn't really see him as a person who is worthy of his time, explanation, or his trust. So Ryan operating with only a fraction of information, he would need to make a decision, does something really, really stupid. And Lee Pace has a fantastic moment of realization as he finds out that an elated Ryan has leaked his antivirus software code to the public.
Do you have any idea what you've done?
Yes, I returned Volley, just like you wanted. It's going to take those bastards years to recover.
They're going to come after you.
I'm not stupid, Joe. I covered every conceivable track. They will never catch me. I am that good.
Nobody's that good.
I am.
We'll see.
If Joe had just sat down, taken a few minutes to explain what he was doing, and think about how Ryan might be taking all this, he could have avoided all of this trouble. Instead, he has to cut and run, leaving Ryan to the sad fate that awaits him. He isn't necessarily discussed much after this, but Ryan's presence is felt. Post-Ryan, Joe is a changed person, gravely wounded, eventually to the point of near isolation. He is a kinder, gentler person who finally understands that how you treat people have consequences. The consequences in this episode for Cam, Donna, Ryan, Joe, and even Boz and Gordon are why I think this episode is canon worthy. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Lauren. Nadia, you chose this from our list of submissions. What did you think of the episode and of Lauren's argument?
So I first picked this because I love Halt and Catch Fire so much. And this gave me the best excuse ever rewatching an episode of it. I agree with her argument. I think it's a beautiful, I know there are certain episodes that tend to get like the starstruck, like everyone talks about how amazing they are, but I forgot how good that boardroom meeting is between Donna and Cam and just how they know each other so well. They know how to hurt each other and say the things that'll really dig. Cameron sobbed, like, that's just such a weirdly, I'm going to say, beautiful depiction of her emotions in such a vulnerable way. And I mean, the title of the episode is Crossing Into the Threshold, which is some relationships are choosing to go together, i.e. Joe and Gordon, and others are clearly not, and not because they want to or don't want to. And it's such a perfect depiction of what Halt and Catch Fire is so good at. The people.
First of all, justice for Tom. I don't think he's a doofus. Seems really unfair. Like, admittedly, it's been a while since I've rewatched it, but like, I think Cameron is probably a handful in marriage, and like, you know, let's not be so mean about Tom. Anyway, I agree with Lauren that the fight scene is great, and with Nadia too. The the push-pull between Cameron and Donna, I mean, not just in that scene, but through the episode as they've, like, even more slowly find their way towards each other, even as we can tell they're not on the same page, even though they're each trying to convince themselves that they are before that big showdown. Like, yeah, that fight scene is incredible. It's definitely a turning point for the series, but I feel like in terms of the episode, like the rest of it is not as strong. And even a lot of the things that Lauren was talking about, it's like, well, after this, there's a time jump. You know, this is a turning point for Joe and Gordon. It's sort of like, yeah. So I feel like the idea that this is setting up stuff that's going to pay off later doesn't necessarily mean that for me, the whole episode is up to the standard of that boardroom scene. So I regret to say I was not convinced by this argument. Dave, what were your thoughts?
During this argument, you heard a lot about what's to come and how this sets things up. And that's true. And it's a good piece of forward thinking and, you know, a testament to having your show thought out well ahead of time so you can set up all these pieces and execute them well. But when you look at the episode itself, like there is one really great set piece in the boardroom where everything comes to a head, and everything before it's kind of dull, you know, not very dynamic. And after it, kind of the same way, like Gordon and Joe, there's a reason why they changed the show from season one to season two to focus more on away from the men and to the women, because the pairing of the women and the dynamic between them is much more interesting than it was ever was with Joe and Gordon. And same with Joe and Ryan. I felt the same way. Like it's just kind of filler in this episode. One really great scene that highlights everything that this show does well between acting and getting relationships right and getting, you know, the push and pull of friends who work together and all that felt very real. But the episode as a whole kind of made me not as fulfilled as I wanted to be coming into it. It's like praising the prep chef for the meal at the end of the night or something, right? Like
good mise en place, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Sarah?
Yeah, that's about where I am. Even being way less versed, this is a show that is on the infamous list and it is pretty close to the top. As listeners know, one of my criteria is, you know, did I want to keep watching after the assigned episode ended? And I did, but it was mostly because this episode was a lot of setup. And as good as that set piece was, and as good as, like, I always love when someone brings an episode of this to the canon, because this show's ear for just like meetings like this and that sort of discomfort and, like, you know, the friendship and the business and these moments where it's like, and at this point in human history, a lot of us are like inextricably bound up with our work and stuff like that. And it's just like that when all of the sort of roads into your own life converge in this way, it's unusual to see something that familiar on television, even though this is not really our industry. So that set piece nailed it the way that the show often nails it in that regard. But as others have said, like, I just think that that is not quite enough. And I think the Lauren's argument was like, this episode is essential to the show's flow, which I agree, but I don't think this is this is the best the show can do, or one that I would necessarily be like, oh, you know, this is in the pantheon.
It's like having a plumbing system and there's like one piece of pipe you take out and the show doesn't work without that piece of pipe. But everybody's really interested in the faucet at the end of the room.
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, I mean, it's still, yeah.
It needs it, but it's not necessarily the most grabby.
Yeah, like it's still a length of PVC that once they patch up the wall, you're never going to see it again. I mean, okay, I lost control of that metaphor. good episode, excellent presentation. I'm not sure that it meets the brief. Yeah. So I guess we should vote.
All right, just before we vote, I got a couple just little weird little points I wanted to make. One, I'm not betting the farm on this, but I remember that back in the 80s, when you entered passwords, this was before we started putting asterisks or dots when you typed, and they mm-hmm. show that. And that kind of feels like maybe they got a 20-something to try to create an 80s interface, and they just assumed, because I like when computers were just your computer, it really wasn't a big deal that somebody, like the looking over your shoulder protection wasn't really something people thought a lot about. Because I think like either you typed and nothing happened, or you typed and like, oh, there's my password. It doesn't matter. I'm alone in my basement with my VIC-20 programming the song The Entertainer into its MIDI. What? Who?
Everybody does that, right? I mean, it was an Apple IIc, but yes. Been there.
And the other thing that was like, oh man, that took me back, was there is a scene where Cameron is in one of the applications that they've designed called Swap Meet, which is kind of like a proto eBay. And somebody messages her in Swap Meet to pick up the phone. And I had a client when I was doing web work back in the early 2000s that would do this all the time. I would get an email from them that says, I'm going to call you in a minute. I'm like, what are you doing?
No, it would be the opposite. She would email you and then she would phone and leave a message and said, I just sent you an email.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And not just once or twice, but this is like
every
how it happened.
Time.
And I looked her up, Tar. She is one of the head people, and it's probably now policy now.
Good for
you
her.
Must call somebody after you email them.
Yeah.
Anyways, so let's put this to the official vote. Nadia, what do you think? Canon worthy, yay or nay?
I'm still going to say yay.
Tara?
I'm going to say nay, but thank you for the presentation, Lauren.
And Sarah?
I am also going to say nay, but very close. And I enjoyed watching the episode, so thanks.
And I'm going to say nay, too. So, unfortunately, here we are. Halt and Catch Fire. Season 3. Episode 7. The Threshold. You're hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Crate Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Why is time for the winner and the loser of the week? Sarah has this week's winner.
I thought maybe I could get through this without laughing. No. The winner is Kiefer Sutherland, who will be playing FDR, yes, that one, in Showtime's anthology series, The First Lady. I don't know why this casting is just, like, tickling me. Like, I think he'll be fine. Maybe a little short, but...
It's because you're imagining FDR with Jack Bauer energy?
Or with vampire teeth. Like, I just... He's very much an 80s movie... symbol for me, and I got a PR blast about this, and I just left it in my inbox for like 4 days because every time I scrolled past it, I'd be like, "What? That is happening." Anyway, I'm totally planning to watch that, and I, you know, he doesn't owe me money or anything. I just find it very funny that a guy who's hanging upside down in The Lost Boys is going to be FDR.
I like to think he got out of the wheelchair about 4 times during filming. Oh, shit. Like
to run into a Christmas tree, as he's wont to do.
And loser of the week?
Loser of the week is Netflix's Cursed, which has been canceled at Netflix after one season. If the title sounds familiar to you, it may be because we had Kate Sanchez on last year to talk about Killer Camp. That was her Around the Dial pick. She enumerated at that time some of the problematic elements of it, mostly around, you know, which races were cast to be which cast of people in the show. And that was sort of, you know, something that people were mad about and I guess continue to be mad about because now the show is dead.
Speaking about things, God damn it. Yeah, I got nothing. You know what time it is? Keep time. All right, everybody, this is the second game time of the season. Tara won the first game 2 weeks ago. Today we are playing Last Minute Changes from Chris Billig, the Billig of Goods, who earns himself an extra credit. Last Minute Shake Up, an attempt to save a show. Given the name of an actor and the season they joined or left a series, can you identify the show?
Ooh.
3 points for a correct answer off the bat, 2 points after the first hint, 1 point after the second hint. Any questions at this point, Sarah D. Bunting?
No.
Only one guess. Thank you. Don't get you. A guess at every part of it.
Okay. I see.
Here's an example. What show did Archie Punjabi leave in its seventh season?
The Good Wife.
The Good Wife is correct. If you didn't know, I would say for your first hint, the show's final season was on CBS in 2015-16. Gotcha. And if you still didn't know it, I would have said Archie Punjabi played Kalinda Sharma on the show. And that was your clues, and that's how it goes. So,
got it.
3 points if you get it off the first piece of information. If you're not sure, ask for the next clue. I'll give it to you. One less point after each hint is read. You'll only get one guess at it, though.
Got it.
Steel mill situation, please, Tara Ariel.
Thank you, Dave. When we played our non-regulation game time, I realized I forgot to say what the stakes were. They were three steel meals, which Sarah D. Bunting has won. So she now has a total of five steel meals. I have nine steel meals. Valued guests have one steel meal. So, Nadia, how this works is if someone craps out on their question and you know the answer, you can very quickly say steel meal before Dave gives the correct answer, and then you can steal that point.
33 questions across two rounds. We're going to do arrivals and departures.
Okay.
We've got one Grossworth Ecological Challenge Zone in the middle of all this. So let's throw it to Pinky to see who is going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Tara, Sarah, Nadia is our order today. Are we ready to play last minute changes?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Tara, you will start us off. Round one, arrivals. These are actors that arrived late in the show's existence. Actors may have played their role prior as guests, but in the final season of the show was their first in the main cast.
Got it.
Make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. Your actor is Billy Connolly, and he joined a show in season five. Name the show or ask for the next hint.
Head of the class.
Head of the class. That's good for 3 points. That's how you do it.
Damn.
Sarah D. Bunting. Angela Bassett, season 15. She joined this show.
Hint.
That show's final season was on NBC in the 2008-09 year.
Hint.
She played Kate Banfield.
Kate Banfield. Angela Bassett, season 15. This is wrong, but in the spirit of game time, Benson. It's been a while.
Incorrect. Anybody know that one?
ER.
That is correct.
Oh, right. God, I bailed by that time.
I figured it was going to be a medical show because of how many seasons.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Good thinking. All right, Nadia. Leonardo DiCaprio joined this show in season 7.
Oh my God. I feel like I should know this. A hint.
The show's last season was ABC in the 91-92 season.
I don't know. Next, please. Hint.
He played a character named Luke Brower.
Brower, maybe.
Character name not particularly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Leonardo DiCaprio in 91-92. Any idea?
It's got to be some youth high school show. I'm so bad at these games. It's not Saved by the Bell because that ended probably earlier. I'm going to say Saved by the Bell. It's wrong.
Yeah, that is Growing Pains.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Tara.
Yes, sir.
Dave Franco, season 9, joined what show?
Scrubs.
Scrubs is correct. Another 3 for Tara. Sarah D. Bunting. James Marsters, season 5. And here's the thing. At this point in the question, you've got two answers.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Angel.
Correct. And the other show joined season 5. Any idea?
Buffy.
Hallie McBeal, season 5.
Oh, my God.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
That's crazy.
To Nadia. Kristen Milioti, season 9. What show did she join season 9?
How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother. 3 points. Tara.
Yep.
Josh Myers, season 8, joined what show?
Hint.
Fox, 2005-2006 was that final season.
Oh, no. Knowing his character is not going to help. Bad TV.
That is That 70s Show playing Randy.
Oh, sure.
Back to Sarah. Carol Kane joined what show season 5?
Taxi.
Is correct. 3 points. Nadia. Jada Pinkett Smith, season 6, joined what show?
Next hint.
NBC 92-93.
Next hint.
Lena James.
Not going to get it. I have no idea.
Tara?
It's a different world.
Different world is correct. Tara, here is your question.
Yep.
Julia Ormond, season 10.
Walking Dead?
Incorrect. Sarah D. Bunting, do you know it?
No.
Law and Order, Criminal Intent. All right, Sarah. James Spader, season 8.
Boston Public?
The Practice.
Oh, it's the other one. Yeah. Fuck.
Alan Shore. To Nadia. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, season 7, joined what... one of two shows?
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, correct. The other show, anybody?
I assume it's Fear the Walking Dead.
Nope.
Supernatural?
Nope.
Good Wife.
Good Wife.
Oh, yes. Right.
But Nadia got her 3 points.
We are all tied up.
Nice. Two questions left for everybody in the arrivals round. Your arrival, Tara Ariano?
Yes.
Shando, season 9.
Oh, no. Hint.
NBC 82-83, final season of this show.
Oh, Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on the Prairie, where she played Jenny. Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. Judy Ann Elder, season 9.
Hint.
CBS 97-98.
Hint.
Harriet Baines Winslow.
Okay, 97-98 was the last season on CBS. I hope it's Murder, She Wrote.
Winslow, the Winslows, that's Family Matters. Family Matters.
Oh, good for her.
Nadia, Balthazar Getty, season 5. What show did he join?
Hint.
ABC, 2005-2006.
Hint.
He played Thomas Grace. I watched the show and I don't remember this at all.
I'm going to get this wrong. It's not Revenge, right?
That is Alias.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
I didn't remember that either.
Yes. Tara.
Yeah.
Leanna Creel, season 4.
Hint.
C-R-E-E-L.
Okay, hint.
NBC 92-93. The next in?
Sure.
Tori Scott.
Saved by the Bell?
Yes, that's good for one. Ooh. It was Saved by the Bell. Sarah D. Bunting, this is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
Tyne Daly, season 11, joined what show?
Season 11? Golly. Hint.
CBS 2018.
Hint.
She played Phyllis.
Oh my God. I don't know. Jag. Navally.
No. Anybody? A little bit of a tricky one. Because this is a revival. This is the 11th season of Murphy Brown.
Oh. Okay.
All right. Mm. Let's finish up round one with this question for Nadia. Debbie Mazar, season 8.
Next hint.
NBC 93-94.
Next hint.
She played Denise Ainello.
On NBC, right? I'm not,
NBC,
I don't,
yeah. Back in the 90s. No idea?
No.
Anybody? That is L.A. Law. L.A.
Oh,
Law.
Wow. All right.
That is round one. Boy. Tara, let's hear the scores at this moment in time.
It's a very close game. Sarah and Nadia are tied with 6 points each. I have 9.
All right, so that means Sarah and Nadia are teaming up in the Grosserf Ecoledger Woo! Challenge Zone. You two have your choice. I'm going to read you six questions from Trivial Pursuit TV stuff from throughout the years. You have your choice of the 90s box, the old TV box that was published in the 80s, or Pop Culture 2, which was also sometime in the early aughts or late 90s.
Up to you, Nadia.
Do the third one.
All right.
Because I'm better at that.
All right. Pop Culture. What TV sitcom has a theme song that entices Come and Knock on Our Door, We've Been Waiting for You?
I know this one. Okay, we're allowed to talk about it. It's Three's Company, yeah?
Sorry.
Okay.
Three's Company, Woo. You are correct.
Forgot to say good luck.
Thanks.
What is the minimum age limit for a contestant on American Idol?
I'm going to say it. Do they have to not be a minor?
I don't. I think they have to be, I would guess 16.
That would be it would be either 18 or 16. Now let's go 16.
Okay.
Nice. 16. Yes. Who stored 6,000 plus hours of his TV talk show's videotapes in an earthquake-resistant vault in a Kansas salt mine?
I don't know.
Someone with 6,000 hours worth of talk show tapes.
Someone very normal.
In a Kansas salt mine?
Yeah. Earthquake-resistant Kansas salt mine.
Earthquake-resistant Kansas salt. I don't really know. I would probably guess Carson, but I'm comfortable guessing whatever you want.
I'm fine with that.
Carson.
I defer to you.
Correct. Jesus! You've got your 4 points. Now, if you can get the next three, we're going to double those points.
Yeah.
What police TV show runs the opening credits while the Who warble, Who Are You? Police TV show is a little... not quite right,
well,
but I think you know the answer.
I think we do.
It is.
Go for it.
It is CSI Original Flavor.
You are correct. What ER, the show, actress, saw her character declared brain dead in the pilot only to return for the series?
Go for it.
Juliana Margulies.
All right. That means you've got one question.
You have to hate her a tiny bit less now if you get these four
points. A little bit less. It's true.
Who was raised from the dead by her Scooby Gang buddies to keep fighting evil?
Obviously.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And you just got 4 points apiece. 8 points split between you. So, Tara, that's probably going to change things. Let's hear the updated scores.
Well, they came into this with 6 points each. Now they have 10 points each and are co in the lead.
All right. Congratulations. Movement.
It will not last.
Beautifully done.
I got to tell you, round two, I think, is an easier way to go because you remember when people left the show, I think, more than when they joined. So we've got 15 questions for you in round two. We'll start again with Tara. Same format, same clue structure, except this is people leaving the show.
Got it.
Judy Ray's season 9, Tara.
Scrubs.
Scrubs again, yes. Sarah, Lisa Bonet, season 8, left what show?
Lisa Bonet left what show? The Cosby Show?
Yes, 3 points. Nadia, Jason Priestley left what show? Season 9. What other show was he on, Ben?
Oh, man. Is it... that your show, that show you guys, 902? Is it? I'm really bad with this stuff. I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm not going to accept 902 as a full answer.
90210.
There we go. I'll give you that. Beverly Hills 90210. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Lisa Edelstein, season 8.
House.
Yes.
Nice.
Sarah D. Bunting, Topher Grace, season 8.
That 70s show.
Correct. Nadia, Anna Faris, season 8.
Mom?
Yeah. I'm sorry. back to Tara. Emily Bett Rickards, season 8.
Arrow.
Wow.
Sarah. Kelly Williams, season 8. Kelly with an I.
The Practice.
Yes.
Wow.
This is the practice question. You will get those full points.
Plumbed from the depths of your subconscious.
It really was. Bless her heart.
Nadia, Charisma Carpenter left what show season 5?
It's going to be either one of two shows that I can think of. Season 5. Give me the second hint, please.
This show's last season, the WB 2003-2004.
OC?
Good guess.
So it's the other one. Yeah.
It is Angel. Tara.
Yep.
Don Lewis, season 6.
A Different World.
Yes. Sarah D. Bunting. Sally Struthers, season 9. Going through all those shows Sally Struthers was on for 9 seasons.
Season 9? Sorry, I got my blondes confused for a second, but I'm good. I think All in the Family?
Yes, 3 points. Nadia, Paul Guilfoyle, season 15.
Hint.
CBS 2014-2015.
Random guess, Big Bang?
Incorrect. He played Jim Brass on, again, CSI Original Ray's Mothership Vegas. All right, everybody's last question coming at you, so let's get a scores, please, Star.
Still very close. Nadia has 16 points. I have 21. Sarah D. Bunting has 22.
All right. Dun, dun, dun. Tara.
Yes.
Lisa Nicole Carson left what show season 5?
Ally McBeal.
Yes.
Yes,
3
she
points.
Did.
Sarah, if you get this off the bat, you will clinch the game today. Andre Brower, season 7.
Homicide, Life on the Street.
Yes. 3 points. Nicely done. And closing it out with Nadia's last question. Rob Lowe, season 7.
Is it Parks and Rec?
It is Parks and Rec.
Whoa.
Nice.
All right. Let's get the final scores, please, Star.
Okay. Nadia finished strong with 19. I had 24. Sarah D. Bunting is our victor with 25.
Nicely done. A respectable showing for all involved. High scoring game.
Yeah.
All right. I have the tiebreaker, which we no longer need, but we will all play for a future steel meal. Everybody is in it.
Okay.
Kristen Chenoweth arrived season 7. What show?
West Wing.
West Wing, yes. Sarah D. Bunting's just getting all the goodies today. Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you, Johnny Carson.
Sarah.
That was a fun game. Thank you, Chris.
It was. Good. Well done, Billy.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Thank you, the team at EHJ Assist. They didn't assist with that
always.
Particular game, but they are currently filling out a few games that we'll be playing in the next couple of weeks. Really indispensable team there. Thank you guys so much for filling out ideas from me and other users. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Great. Well, guys, that is it. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Yeah, quiet. Silence. We broadcasted our thoughts and opinions about Gossip Girl over the internet before going around the dial with stops at The White Lotus, Monsters at Work, We Are Lady Parts, Heist, and This Is Pop. Lauren's candidate, The Threshold, was more Halt than Catch Fire. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah D. Bunting was the winner of this week's Game Time from Chris. Next up, it's TV Vacations on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime Schmigadoon. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara.
Oh, shit. I think I did double book the honeymoon suite.
Sarah.
They're already a hashtag.
And Nadia.
It takes much longer to get between boroughs in New York. Driving or train.
We'll see you next Amen. Time right here on Extra Hot Great.
No good secret goes unpublished. Watch this space. Or don't. You'll hear about it soon enough either way. Till then, XOXO, Gossip Girl.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.